This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
A report by Howard Sapers, Canada's correctional investigator, has found that over-representation of Aboriginal people in federal corrections is pervasive and growing. Levels of imprisonment in Canada's Aboriginal communities are higher than the overall incarceration rate in the United States, a nation that famously has the highest rate of imprisonment in the world and possibly in history. Lisa Kerr, a Trudeau Foundation scholar and doctoral candidate in law at New York University, observes in a Toronto Star commentary that a recent flood of policy changes initiated by the federal government seems designed to stamp out any rehabilitative intent in corrections services. Kevin spoke with Lisa Kerr yesterday, and here is that interview.
Lisa, you've compared the level of imprisonment in Canada's Aboriginal communities with levels of imprisonment in the United States and elsewhere. Tell us about that analysis.
Sure. Well, it's well known that the U.S. has very high levels of imprisonment, the highest in the world and probably in history. And when you work in this area, you get very used to the figure that captures the American rate of incarceration, which is 730 per 100,000 people. So I was extremely struck when I read the Correctional Investigator's special report last week, and I saw that the Aboriginal rate of incarceration was, at last count, 910 per 100,000, and getting steadily worse. And so that number shows us that the scale, the overall scale of incarceration in Aboriginal communities is actually worse than the overall scale in the United States. And that, to me, is a very startling point of comparison and one that really cries out for our response.
Give us a sense of the kind of, I guess you've mentioned Europe and the U.S. Where does Canada fit generally in this, and how dire is this situation?
Well, Canada's general level of incarceration is comparable with nations like Australia, comparable with nations in Europe. So our general level is sort of in line with similar, you know, liberal democracies. But when you break down our rate of incarceration and look at how it appears in Aboriginal communities, you see that that our Aboriginal rate of incarceration extends well beyond the United States and, you know, far in excess of other countries. And it's not unusual that you see racial minorities sort of overrepresented in prison populations. And there's many sort of complex background social factors that explain that. But the way that this is unfolding in Canada is becoming really quite remarkable. And the sort of, you know, many of us hear a lot about the over-incarceration of African Americans in the United States prison system. Our over-representation of Aboriginal people is actually worse than that as well.
You quote political sociologist Seymour Martin Lipset saying that Canadians have a self-defining critique of American punitiveness. Tell us more about that idea.
So Seymour Lipset made a career of studying and comparing the U.S. and Canada, and his view was that in order to fully understand either country, you actually had to study both of them. And on the topic of punishment, Lipset was referring to a tendency that we have in Canada to sort of paint Americans as especially punitive. And of course, there is some evidence of that, not least of which is the rate of incarceration in the U.S., which I just mentioned. But we do have actually plenty of in common with the U.S. when it comes to our styles or modes of imprisonment. So we have poor quality in many of the same ways that American prisons have poor quality. So particular topics like access to college-level education, access to law libraries. Many Canadian prisons have less to offer than their American counterparts. And as I say, when it comes to a concern about racial minorities being disproportionately represented in prisons, Canada's problem in that regard is actually worse.
You mentioned the Ashley Smith case, and that Canadians think that her case is unique, but it's not. Tell us more.
Well, you know, I've read some media items, and I've heard discussion in Canada where there's sometimes a suggestion that Ashley's case is somehow extraordinary. And I don't doubt that there were some unique and extremely disturbing parts of her case and choices made by correctional officials in her case that were unique and distressing. But I think that the larger truth is that many parts of Ashley Smith's case are actually extremely representative. So the critical issue in her case was how long she was held under what's called administrative segregation, right, where you spend the vast majority of your time in a single cell, stripped of basic rights and privileges, denied normal human interaction. And there are many other prisoners in Canada that are being held under that form of segregation as we speak. There are no time limits on the practice of isolating prisoners in Canada. It can go on for months and years, as it was, as it did for Ashley, and as it is currently for dozens of others. Segregated prisoners are often transferred from one institution to the next in order to avoid triggering administrative reviews. This happened in Ashley's case. I think it was 17 times in 2 years that she was transferred from one facility to the other in order to avoid what little procedural protections there are for segregated prisoners. This is, you know, all reported on by the correctional investigator. We know that the prisoner grievance system really failed Ashley Smith, and it fails almost every prisoner. And, you know, perhaps the most important point is that segregation is often used on the mentally ill or those with mental health challenges. And it's used on them because it's difficult to house those prisoners in other parts of the prison. So it's sort of an easy option, but it's in fact an illegal option to segregate someone instead of accommodating their mental health problems. So, you know, on all of these dimensions, I think Ashley Smith's case is actually emblematic in the vast majority of respects.
You say that so-called tough-on-crime politics is having an adverse effect on corrections in Canada. What is happening and what are you observing?
Well, I mean, what I see is that the government's pursuing reforms at two levels, right? There's the level of sentencing laws, there's a discussion about mandatory minimums and so on. And then there's a level of penal policy, which has to do with how prisons are actually operated and what prisoners experience while they're incarcerated. And I think the thrust of these reforms at both levels can only be described as a desire to send more people to prison alongside a desire to make prisons less rehabilitative. And I mean, we've heard it countless times now. Many of us are wondering the same question, which is, why are we doing this in an era when crime is down and falling? And the reply of the Harper government has invariably been that it's about public safety. And, you know, I think public safety is a perfectly legitimate goal for a government to pursue. But many of the reforms that we're seeing don't actually seem particularly connected to public safety, at least in any way that many of us can discern. So just to give one example, a very striking example from this fall was when Minister of Public Safety, Vic Caves, announced that the government would cancel the contracts of religious providers in Canadian prisons. Now, this means we lose an opportunity to sort of enhance the religious lives and the moral lives of people who could probably benefit from that kind of support. It also means that life is much harder for correctional employees, for those people who have to go and work in our prisons. You know, they've lost a trusted and often very helpful ally in managing the needs and issues that come up in the course of prison administration. So that kind of policy change, it's very unclear to me that there's any connection to public safety. And in fact, you know, I think there's some reason to believe that it's in opposition to concerns about public safety and about safety within the prisons.
And you say that people do ask, why are we doing this? Well, why indeed are we doing this? Is this a case of bad policy but potentially good politics?
You know, it's a question that I've spent a lot of time thinking about, and my honest answer is that I do not know. I suppose that this government perceives some kind of political upshot. I don't personally understand that logic. I feel like Canadians are very confused by these policies. And, you know, I actually have doubt that there is such widespread support I don't think Canadians, as a rule, like expensive and effective social programs. And, you know, I think the more that we learn, the more Canadians are doubting this political platform. So, you know, and I suppose that we could change sentencing laws and send people to prison for longer on the basis that prison is effective and helpful and productive in terms of interrupting the criminal patterns of particular individuals. But when you're pursuing these sentencing reform changes at the same time as taking out things like religious counseling in prison, I really have to wonder, you know, what is being pursued? Is this a matter of spite, of just sort of general resentment towards people who have a hard time abiding by our shared social norms? Because it's hard to make sense of it, as you can tell from my answer, from the perspective of sort of ordinary policy analysis.
If we return momentarily to comparisons between the U.S. and Canada again, you note in your commentary that there has been some positive change in the U.S. What has been occurring there?
Yeah, so really remarkable data that came in the past week, which shows that the rate of incarceration of Black Americans has actually gone down significantly. And so the data reflects the period of the years 2000 to 2009. And what we saw was that particularly striking in that category of Black women, their rate of incarceration dropped 30.7% over that period. And just to put it in perspective, in the year 2000, Black women were imprisoned at 6 times the rate of white women. By the year 2009, that number was 2.8 times the rate of white women. So these are significant improvements. And especially when the story of American imprisonment over the last 30 years has been, you know, one of increasing intensity and severity and expansion. And so to see this kind of change after decades of movement in the opposite direction is quite remarkable. And, you know, in terms of explanations, I think American, you know, criminologists and sociologists are trying to figure out those explanations. There's undoubtedly many factors at play. I think part of the story is that many of the reforms that came in under the war on drugs in the 1980s have been pulled back, have been repealed. There used to be a very significant disparity between sentencing for crack offenses and sentencing for cocaine offenses. Your sentence was 100 times worse if you were if it was a crack-related offense. And that disparity, which was really unsupported in any kind of, empirical literature about the harms caused by crack versus cocaine, that disparity has been improved. It's now just a 10-to-1 disparity, and that brought a lot of sentences down. There was also a very key decision from the United States Supreme Court in the year 2005 where a lot of judicial discretion in the federal sentencing system was restored. So this meant that because of this opinion that came down, it's called Booker, judges had more of an ability to give someone a reduced sentence if they thought that the circumstances required that. So it's a lot of the changes in the U.S. that are improving race disparities that are finally putting some kind of brake on the prison population have to do with drug sentencing and judicial discretion, and that's the exact opposite direction that we're going in Canada right now.
Lisa Kerr, we'll have to leave it at that. Thank you very much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
That was Lisa Kerr. She is a Trudeau Foundation scholar and doctoral candidate in law at New York University. She is rethinking current approaches to incarceration and justice, focusing on the quality of a prison sentence rather than on the length of a time served.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with the Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.